So the first time I was up here, we taught through Joshua 1 and 2. And so again, we're Calvary Chapel, so that means we go line by line and verse by verse through the Bible. And Josh gave me the opportunity to pick up where he left off in Matthew. But since he's not here, he can't tell me what to do. So we're going to go pick back up where we left off in Joshua. And where we left off at is Moses had just died, passed the reins off to Joshua. And now Joshua was leading 2 to 2.4 million people as they were going to take God's promise going into the land. And they just sent a couple of spies in to spy out the land. Rahab hid those spies. They came back, gave the report, and where we're going to pick up at now in verse 3 is them crossing into the crossing over the Jordan into the promised land and taking God's promise. So with that, let's pray. Lord God, thank you again for this time together and this opportunity to serve you, Lord, and to just be in your word. Soften our hearts to your word, Lord, and be with us as we go through this, and just let your word touch us and meet us where we're at, God. All this we ask and pray of you. Amen. All right, so again, 2 to 2.4 million people, plus all their belongings, all their livestock that they took out of Egypt. They've been wandering in the desert for 40 years because their parents stepped out in unbelief and they didn't have faith in God's promise that he was going to deliver them into the promised land. So that generation died, and the next generation came in, which was, you know, all their children, and now their children are there ready to step into what God has called them to. So what we're going to talk about today is really about driving out what God has called for you to get out of your lives and to enjoy what God has called for you and what he wants for you to enjoy. So verse 1 of chapter 3, then Joshua rose early in the morning and they set out from the acacia grove and came to Jordan. And he and all the children of Israel and lodged there before they crossed over. So it was after 3 days that the officers went through the camp and they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the priest of the Levites bearing it, Then you shall set out from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you go, for you have not passed this way before. So this is like us saying, all right, this church, we're going to go to battle. We're going to cross over, and where we're going to cross over is right in front of the stronghold, the fort, the garrison that you would first take over. So Pastor Josh, Pastor Arnold, get the pup ready. You guys are going to go first, and we're going to be about 2,000 cubits behind, which is about half a mile. So we're going to send our pastors out first, and we're going to be about half a mile behind you guys. Good luck. Right? So, but they've got the Ark of the Covenant with them. And typically what we've seen throughout throughout Exodus, when they're wandering around in the wilderness, they would take the veil, cover the ark, then they would take some badger skins and they would cover it with blue, and that would stand out like a sore thumb in the middle of the desert. And that would be a warning to the people, like, this is the covenant, don't touch it or else you could die. And you'll see that in other verses through Saul and David's time, that warning come to fruition. So this is really one of the first times that a lot of these people have gotten to see the Ark of the Covenant, and one of the only times they ever will. I think the only other time will be when they go around Jericho and take that city. So getting to now see the Ark of the Covenant and see God's presence outside of all of the promises that he's provided over the years of them wandering is just an amazing opportunity and a build of confidence as they step into what God is about to call them into. So we're going to find out as we read through this that this is the time of the barley harvest. And they're going to ride their Harleys to that, that harvest. And so this is the early spring. So a lot of the mountains around this area have snow that are starting to melt. So the Jordan is going to be overflowing its banks. And there's a lot of danger that comes with that. And when you talk about almost 2.5 million people, plus their livestock and all their belongings, not the best time to cross a river, right, is when the banks are overflowing. You've got strong currents. Some of you people may know, I used to swim quite a bit. There's a couple races around Charleston, you swim the river, but you have to really know the currents and time those well, otherwise you're swimming against the currents and it will turn a 4 or 5 hour day into a 13 hour day or where you don't finish. So a lot of risk there of getting that, you know, people getting swept away. There's a lot of risk of, you know, with livestock, can really mess the ground up, especially if it's wet. I grew up on a cattle farm, and around our barn, if it rained, you could very easily lose a boot in the mud. So they had sandals, right? So it would just be a lot of logistical challenges that would make it not an optimal time to go across at this time. But we'll see that what doesn't make sense to us is the perfect opportunity for God to show his power and his mercy and strength and promises and faithfulness to us. So verse 5. So then Joshua said to the people, "Sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord do wonders among you." Then Joshua spoke to the priests, saying, "Take up your Ark of the Covenant and cross over before the people." So they took the Ark of the Covenant and they went before the people. Sorry, I got this notebook here. I had some computer problems this morning, and I was telling Nick about it, and he's like, "Hard drive? No, man, my commute was fine. It's my laptop." So I'm working off of a notepad today. So several people have asked about the dad jokes as they found out I was up here, so you guys are welcome. All right. So then verse 7, "The Lord said to Joshua, 'This day I'll begin to exalt you in the sight of all of Israel, so that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you.'" So, you know, huge encouragement there. "You shall command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, 'When you have come to the edge of the water of the Jordan, you shall stand in the Jordan.'" So Joshua and the children of Israel, so Joshua said to the children of Israel, "Come here and hear the words of your Lord, your God." Verse 10, "And Joshua said, 'By this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Hivites and the Perizzites and the Gershites and the Amorites and the Jebusites. Behold," what, sorry? There are a lot, of, all the sites. "Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, all your of all the earth is crossing over before you into the Jordan. Now, therefore, take yourselves 12 men from the tribe of Israel, and one man from every tribe. And it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet touch the priests who bear the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, second time, Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off, the waters that come down from the upstream, so they will stand from a heap." So it was, when the people set out from the camp to cross over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as those who bore the Ark came to the Jordan, and the feet of the priests who bore the Ark dipped the edge of the water, for the Jordan overflowed its banks during the whole time of the harvest. So, a couple miracles here that we're going to run into. As soon as the priests put their feet in the water, the water stopped. And we're going to find out it's going to be like 16 or so miles upstream that the water stopped. And the water stopped and started to recede down. So you've got the river who stopped 16 miles above or before where they were at, you know, all the way down to the Dead Sea. And we're going to find out how, you know, in a few verses, you know, roughly how long this took. But the water is not flowing anymore. So it goes from banks overflowing to not flowing at all. And that is going to trickle down to not only the cities before where they're at, but also the cities downstream. So a ton of people are going to see this miracle. And we're going to see later on their heart for that. So it brings up a point, right? So the people of God are now seeing this miracle. And again, like, they're not stepping on muddy, wet rocks that are slippery and hard to get through. This is dry ground that they're stepping on. So two miracles that they're experiencing. We often look back, or it's easy to look back rather, and say, you know, how did you guys not have faith? Like, you guys were, how many plagues did you guys see when you were in Egypt? 10? Okay. When you guys were getting chased by the army out of Egypt, what happened across the Red Sea? Okay. You guys got fed manna for 6 days out of every week and enough for the Sabbath? Okay. Now, you guys, you know, the pillar of fire by day and the pillar of smoke by night to lead you guys. Like, how did you guys not believe, right? But when we're in a trial or when we're faced with a temptation or a battle, do we not have that same mentality? Are we questioning God? Like, why am I doing this? Why am I here? Why are you letting this happen to me? But you know, God is faithful, right? God has allowed you into this because he deemed you worthy. And you should count it as a blessing for that. So I've heard a few times before, like, you know, if I could only see all these miracles, if I could have seen Jesus make the lame walk or heal the blind, then I would believe. But think about all the people who saw those, who saw Jesus work those miracles, who saw God work those miracles, and still came back with these 10 evil reports, which caused them to have to wander through the wilderness for 40 years. So just know that as we go through the trials that we're promised that we're going to go through, to keep that faith, to have faith in God above all else, and to know that he's there and he will be there on the other side of that as well. So verse 17, then the priest who bore the Ark of the Covenant stood on firm dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all Israel crossed over dry ground until all the people had crossed completely over the Jordan. So again, about 16 miles upstream, and that again, the miracle of not only them shutting the Jordan off, but also it being across dry ground. So chapter 4, verse 1, then it came to pass when all the people had completely crossed over the Jordan, the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one from every tribe, and command them, saying, take for yourselves 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, and place where the priest's feet stood firm. You shall carry them over with you and leave them lodging in the place where you lodge tonight. So these 12 men got to get a lot closer than that half mile to the priests and to the Ark of the Covenant there. And When I was studying for this, a lot of the commentators think that this is the same place that where John the Baptist was at, and where he was baptizing is where they crossed over right here. So, verse 4, then Joshua called the 12 men whom he had appointed from the children of Israel, saying, one man from every tribe, cross over before the ark of the Lord your God in the midst of the Jordan. Each one of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of tribes of Israel. This may be a sign among you when your children ask in the time to come, saying, what do these stones mean to you? So here, God is planting an opportunity for children to ask questions to their parents. Right? Why do you have these big stones here in a pile? Right? And if you look at Deuteronomy 6, you know, it tells us, you know, going throughout your day, talk to your kids about who the Lord is and what the Lord has done for you and what they're doing for your kids. And it gives them an opportunity to say, hey, you know, this is, this is God's faithfulness to us. This is us crossing into the promised land because this is what God told us that he was going to give us. So verse 7 of chapter 4, then you shall answer them, saying that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord when it crossed over the Jordan, and the waters of the Jordan were cut off. And these stones shall be a memorial for your children of Israel forever. And the children of Israel did so, just as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones from the midst of the Jordan. And the Lord had spoken to Joshua according to the number of the tribes of Israel, of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them to the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. Then Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, where the place where the feet of the priests had bore the Ark of the Covenant had stood. And they were there to this day. So if you look back at Deuteronomy chapter 28, there's a few verses in there at the beginning of that chapter. If Israel is faithful, then God is going to do all of these blessings. And then there's like 20 or 30 something verses or more maybe that talk about all of the things that are going to happen when Israel is not faithful. One of those things is drought. So when there's a drought, you're going to have, you know, the Jordan's going to not flow. It's not going to overflow its banks. You're not going to have, that resource, which is huge for the agricultural community that Israel was and is now. But you've got these stones that Joshua stacked in the river that, you know, if you think about it, if there's a drought, then you're going to have these stones show, right? So just a reminder to Israel, hey, you guys aren't being faithful, and now you're starting to see the river drop. So it may be a reminder for you to turn it around and get back on track. Maybe not. It doesn't say that here, just what I pick up. All right, so verse 10. So the priests who bore the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished, and the Lord had commanded Joshua to speak to the people according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. And the people hurried and crossed over. Then it came to pass, when all the people had completely crossed over, that the ark of the Lord and the priests crossed over in the presence of the people. And the men of Reuben, the men of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over armed before the children of Israel as Moses had spoken to them. So all this livestock, 2 to 2.4 million people and their belongings crossing over here. It says they hurried, but this could have taken all day, right? If you have 2,000 people across, it could take like 8 hours to get everybody across, plus all the cows and sheep and camels and all that come along with it. So they said hurried. This is a long day. Now, I wouldn't want to stand up for 8 hours and then to have an ark that I'm holding on top of my shoulders there. Like, not a fun time, I think, right? But what does Jesus say in the New Testament? He says that if you're doing his calling, if you're doing his work, then the yoke is light. And we can apply that with us too, right? So, a couple months ago, maybe sometime this summer, Crystal and I met with this couple who was in town, and they travel all around the U.S. and consult for different churches. And we met with them to go over some things and get some ideas and inputs for the children's ministry. And one of the things that that she said was that all of her volunteers would always have to volunteer every Sunday. So they would have to be in the classroom. And there were some logistical things that were set up there too, like multiple services, so they still got fed. But one of the things that Crystal brought up was, just a concern about burning out the volunteers. And she brought up something like this, where it's, if you're doing the work of the Lord, then you're not going to get burnt out. It's easy work. And, several times Crystal and I have talked, and I've heard her say several, and Crystal's my wife, by the way, if you don't know. She always has the energy and the time and just the desire to build into and build up this children's ministry and to pour into the kids that are in children's ministry. And I remember when she first got the call and from Josh and Jess we were coming off of 26, coming back home, and she's like, "Man, I love my kids. Other kids not so much. Like, this isn't me. Like, I just don't want to do this." And it's just amazing to see how God has used her and as she stepped into that, and just the opportunities that she's given to grow those kids and to pour into them, and what a blessing it's been to her and to our family and our marriage. So if it is something that the Lord is calling you to do, then it is going to be easy. Now, there may be challenges that come along with it, right? Like, there's issues that we have to deal with, but they're easy. They're not difficult. But if you're doing some work and it is difficult, then what are you doing? Right, that's working in your flesh, right? Lost where I was at. So we'll try chapter 3, verse 1. Just playing. So about 40,000 prepared for, here we go, verse 13. So chapter 4, 13, about 40,000 prepared for war, crossed over before the Lord of the battle, the Lord for battle, to the plains of Jericho. On that day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of Israel, and they feared him as they had feared Moses all the days of his life. Then the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, "Command the priests who bear the Ark of Testimony to come up from the Jordan." Joshua therefore commanded the priests, saying, "Come up from the Jordan." And it came to pass, when the priests bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord had come from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet touched the dry land, that the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. So they just crossed into the Promised Land. They just did what God told them to do, right? But now they're faced with a challenge. They've crossed over right in front of Jericho, which is the first battle that they're going to have to encounter. It's the first place that they're going to have to take over. So now that the Jordan has filled and overflowed its banks again, what's very difficult for them to do? Tuck tail and head back. That's right. So we can take a look at this and we can say, Jesus has called me to do something, and like I just said with Crystal, like, it can be a blessing, but there's going to be challenges that come along with it. This isn't all sunshine and rainbows, right? There are challenges because we're in a fallen world, But as long as we're going in faith and going in to those blessings in faith, then we're able to let God weed out the things that he doesn't want us or doesn't want in our life, right? So I guess what I'm trying to say is God can take you to a place where there's a huge blessing or blessings, right? So he's putting you where he wants you to be, but he's also putting you face to face with something that he doesn't want in your life, right? So, and I think that we all have experience with this, right? Whether that's some type of sin or covetousness, you know, lust, drinking, whatever it is, there are things that he's going to want to cut out of your life to sanctify you and bring you closer to him. And sometimes the way that he does that is by putting you into a place where you're blessed. And then as you deal with those issues that are extremely difficult, making sure that you don't do that in your own flesh or in your own strength, but you gotta give that to him. Forgive me while I turn the page. All right, 19. Now the people came up from Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they camped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. So does anyone know what you're supposed to do on the first or on the 10th day of the first month? Starting to get ready for Passover. So this is the third time that we have recorded that they're about to celebrate Passover. But the 10th day of the first month is when you would set aside a lamb for Passover. So this right here is how we knew before about, you know, the time of the year it was and all that. So then those 12 stones which they took out of Jordan, Joshua set up in Gilgal. Then he spoke to the children of Israel, saying, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall let your children know, saying, Israel crossed over the Jordan on dry land. So again, going back to what I said earlier, you have so many opportunities to talk to your kids every day about who the Lord is and what he does for us. As you can probably tell, I'm not the best reader, right? But Crystal reads every night. We have our little routine to tuck Everett in, and Crystal reads the Bible to him. Every once in a while, she'll be, you know, something will happen where she can't read to him. So I'll ask if he wants me to read to him, and more times than not, he's like, "No, you stop too much and ask me to help pronounce words." So he's six, so it's embarrassing for both of us. But we were eating dinner the other night, and it was Skylar and Everett. Skylar's our oldest daughter, and Everett and me and Crystal were eating, and we're talking about getting in trouble at school when we all in school, and you know, naturally I didn't have a lot to contribute to the conversation. But, so my mom's here, and I just heard her roll her eyes in the back of her head. But, so, you know, they're all talking, and I'm just listening, of course. And I asked Everett one of those gotcha questions, one of those trick questions, like, hey, have you ever been in trouble at school? Like, a couple weeks ago, he'd been in some trouble at school. So, we all knew the answer to this, but he's just like, yeah, Dad, everybody sins. I'm like, oh, well, that shut me right up. But I mean, just a reminder, like, of how much, you know, your kids absorb around you and what they pick up, right? Whether that's good, and that's what you want them to pick up, or whether it's something bad, and it's not what you want them to pick up. You know, there's been times when I've had to go in and apologize to Everett, like, hey, I shouldn't have acted this way, I shouldn't have said this to you, or, you know, whatever, and I'm sorry, do you forgive me, and then we cry and hug and all that stuff. So verse 23, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over, as the Lord your God did the Red Sea, which he had dried up before us until we had crossed over. All the people of earth may know that the Lord, that the hand of the Lord that is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. All right, so chapter 5, verse 1. So then it was when all the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side of the Jordan, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, had heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan from the from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, that their hearts melted and there was no spirit of them any longer because of the children of Israel. So if you take this and look at this and you compare this to the Ninevites when Jonah was there to preach. So in that instance, you've got Jonah who is coming to Nineveh, does not want to be there, smelling like fish guts. And very harsh and straight to the point message. You know, you've got 40 days and you're going to be destroyed. The Lord is going to wipe you out in 40 days. And they repented. And I mean, it was to the point where they put sackcloth and dust on all their animals. And the Lord, instead of wiping them out in 40 days, spared them for almost another 100 years. So compare that to what we're seeing here, and that they, you know, all of these kings and all these people saw what had happened with the Jordan. It dried up. The Israelis are going across on dry land. The people of Jericho watching this, because this is right in front of their front door, and you know, them being worried that, all right, well, we've got these 2 million plus people who are going to come and invade us now. But instead of repenting, they harden their hearts. So, and you see this a lot with people who are new to the faith, where they, you know, they've changed, right? And people don't know why they've changed, or they're you know, asking like, what's going on? You used to do this and this, and you used to be cool or fun, and you know, whatever. And they've changed, and sometimes they don't want to hear about why they've changed. You know, well, let me tell you about Jesus. But people can see this change, and they may want to argue with your theology, but they can't argue with the fact that you've changed, right? I thought I was going somewhere profound with that, and I just kind of lost my train of thought. So we'll jump back in at chapter, verse 2. At that time, the Lord said to Joshua, make flint knives for yourself and circumcise the sons of Israel. Again, the second time. So Joshua made flint knives for himself and circumcised the sons of Israel at the hill of the foreskins. So there's a lot to unpack here, and I'm not going to unpack it. But circumcision was an outward sign that the Jews were different, that Israel was set apart from everyone else around them. And it's a reminder throughout the day for men that they are to be different, and that it's a sign that of a cutting away of the heart. And they should have been doing this on the eighth day, like when the kid's 8 days old, they should have been circumcising. And they hadn't been since they left Egypt, which is, I think, a lot to say about the parents' disregard for what the Lord had called them to do. But again, it shows them stepping out in unbelief and unfaithfulness. And verse 4. And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the people who came out of Egypt who were males, all of the men of war who had died in the wilderness on the way, after they had come out of Egypt, for all the people who had come out had been circumcised, but all the people born in the wilderness on the way as they came out of Egypt had not been circumcised. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness, to all the people who where men of war had came out of Egypt were consumed because they did not obey the voice of the Lord, to whom the Lord swore that he would show them the land which the Lord had sworn to our fathers, that he would give us a land flowing with milk and honey. Then Joshua circumcised their sons, who he raised up in place, for they were uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way. So it was when they had finished circumcising all the people that they stayed in place, in their places in the camp, until they were healed. So if you go back to Genesis, Simeon and Levi had a sister that was raped, and they went to this village and they said, all right, you guys can marry her, but you have to get circumcised. The whole village has to be circumcised. So they agreed to it. All the men were circumcised. And then on the second or third day, they came in, and these two guys wiped out this whole city. So now you've got this entire fighting force who had just crossed over the Jordan, right? And now the Jordan is back to overflowing its banks, so they can't retreat. They're right in front of the city that they're called to take over, right? So you know all these people are standing on the wall, their binoculars, like, what's going on? Well, these people just crossed over the Jordan on dry land. Oh, well, now what are they doing? Well, they're doing something to the men. Okay, well, that's, I mean, very easy for the people of Jericho to come out at this point and do raiding parties, right? So if you think about this from a military standpoint, like, there's a lot of things in here that I wouldn't want to be involved with if I was, you know, back overseas in Iraq. Like, this is not where you want to go through any medical procedures, is right on the battle line. But, you know, our timing is not God's timing, right? And what, you know, this doesn't make sense to, I mean, it may make sense to you guys, doesn't make sense to me as to why this would be the time to do this. Like, why not do this back over here on the safe side of the Jordan? But this is a time when God is telling us, sanctify ourselves, get ourselves right, and get prepared for stepping into the calling that God has for you. All right, so verse 9. Then the Lord said to Joshua, this day I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. Therefore, the name of the place is Gilgal to this day. Now the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at twilight on the plains of Jericho. Again, something else I would not want to do on the battlefield, right, is have this big feast, right? I would want to have my mind right, and I would want to be getting ready for what's about to come ahead, not getting healed from a medical procedure and not having this big feast. But again, obeying what God has put in front of you and the calling that he has for you, and removing the things that he doesn't want in your life. Verse 11, and then they ate of the produce of the land on the day after Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on that very same day. Then the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land, and the children of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate food in the land of Canaan that year. So they had Passover. The next day, they started doing raiding parties, right? Started going into all these barns and taking all everybody else's food, and they no longer had manna. So God had been supernaturally giving them manna to sustain them throughout their time in the wilderness, and now that there's provisions that they have from the land, they don't need that provision from God anymore. So then verse 13, then it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, a man stood opposite him with a sword drawn in his hand, and Joshua went to him and said, are you for us or are you for our adversaries? This is pretty bold, right? So, and I think at this point, like, Joshua's got to be getting worked up. So, you know, they've crossed into land. They've done all of these things that God's told them to do. And he's like, how are we going to do this? Like, there's these huge walls that we're going to have to conquer. We don't have any of the siege weapons or other tactics that you would typically see or want when going up in front of this type of challenge. And, you know, I mean, if I'm in his shoes, like, I'm going to be concerned. Like, how are we doing this? And then look up and see this guy with a weapon in his hand. And Joshua just goes right up to him. You going to fight with us or are you with the other guys? And then he says, no, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, what does my Lord have to his servant? Then the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take your sandal off your foot, for this place where you stand is holy. And Joshua did so. So leading up to this book of Joshua, Joshua has been under Moses and learning and watching Moses lead until Moses passed and Joshua stepped into that position. So when Moses was met by God, he was met when he was out as a shepherd by a burning bush. That's what Moses needed from God. Now, what Joshua needs from God is a warrior. And that's how God meets him, right where he's at, right in front of the walls of Jericho as a warrior. And Joshua comes to him and says, hey, whose side are you on? And it's the Lord here that says, I'm the Lord. I'm not on any side. I'm going to take care of you. And it's just to say that where you're at today, God can meet you. He will meet you there if you allow him. Right? So, not to say that life is going to be easy once you're under the blood of Christ, but the work, again, is going to be light. And he will meet you where you need him to be and how you need him to be. But that involves removing some of the garbage that we've allowed in our lives as he's called us to remove that and to work to sanctify ourselves so that we can continue stepping out in faith and continuing to expand his kingdom through the Great Commission that Arnold mentioned earlier and sharing our faith and testimony with others throughout our day. So these battles and these challenges to remove what God is calling you to remove are not easy, but in Christ and in faith, in prayer, in time with his word, he will walk you through that and he will help you through removing all of those, all of the sin that's in your life. But that's only through his strength, right? Not through your strength or what you can do. So with that, if there is things in your life that you need help or encouragement or prayer with, I'll be up here. Pastor Arnold's over here. There's other people that can pray with you. My wife back there would love to pray with you. So if you do want that prayer, please don't hesitate. And if you don't know Christ, don't wait. Now is the time. This is, you know, waiting till tomorrow is Satan's favorite strategy for the lost. But we have no guarantee for tomorrow. So, again, if you don't know Christ or if you don't know where you're going when you die, then please don't wait to have that conversation. So with that, let's pray. Well, God, again, thank you for this time together, Lord, in your word. And thank you for the lessons that you've given us through Joshua and through your people. And let us learn from those instead of learning the hard way from ourselves, God. Please be with us this week as we go out into the world and just protect us and let your grace shine upon us, God. All of us ask and pray of you. Amen.